Technorama episode 568. 568. Man, we've been doing this a long time.
No.
Wookiee Summer Shave. Hey, welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time joining us, welcome. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Never know. 568 shows, but there's still new people joining and exploring and learning, and we appreciate that very much. And if you're returning, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
I just tell people we just don't know when to stop. That's the thing. That's a
show. This train just keeps going. There's no track left. It just keeps going. My name is Chuck Tomasi from, from ServiceNow. I've been doing too much work stuff.
Sort of.
From sunny Phoenix, Arizona. Starts with an S. Sunny Phoenix, Arizona. And joining me across the table is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
Yes, I'm doing well. I'm from humid South Carolina.
We should do one of those high fives on the screen. Hold up your... No, your other hand, other hand.
Oh, weather. There you go.
Ready? 1, 2, 3. Ugh.
Ugh. All right, we'll have to work on that.
If you're watching on the video, that was funny. If you're not watching, if you're just listening to audio, that's fine too.
Remember that that video they had for Gmail a long time ago, and people were take the letter and they pass it off. Yeah, we should do that sometime.
We'll have to have like punch cards or something. Here, Craig, here's your punch card.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Hey, why'd you hand me this for?
What do you say we do the feedback thing?
I'm ready.
We have lots of feedback, and we love we just like the music. You're ruining it. Spoiler alert.
Can we make it any better? I mean, I'm ruining it.
Our feedback includes an email from Claudio Miranda, a longtime listener. He says, "Hey, fellas, good to hear Technorama back again after the hiatus." Yes, we took some time off in May and part of June because of work and family vacations and whatnot. He says, "Funny enough, my receipt for tonight's dinner was quite apropos for your return, so I thought I'd share." And he sent us, what was it, Pollo Tropical? It was a chicken place, apparently.
Tropical chicken.
In the image on the receipt, he's customer number 101.
His order number,
It's funny how that number just keeps popping up. It's on buildings in movies and
everywhere,
even in The Matrix.
I wonder what a numerologist has to say about that.
Neo lived in apartment 101. And
yes, he did.
The Terminator is Cyberdyne Systems model 101. So there you go. We also have an email from Claudio. He says, "Hey, fellas." Wait a minute. We just got another email from Claudio. Two of them.
Yes.
He's getting more programmed to our show. He says, kind of a follow-up to the last email, I noticed the duration of episode 567 was the one we recorded on the 26th of June 2019. He says he just downloaded that today. The time was 1 hour, 1 minute, and 1 second. 01.
We planned that, by the way.
01.
Yeah, we planned that, by the way.
Right. We edited it. We compressed the audio just enough.
Hey, do you know, I know you haven't seen Endgame, so this isn't really a spoiler or anything, but there's a line where Tony Stark says, "I love you 3000. And so that was used in the movie, but theorists thought that the 3000 was referring to the cumulative minutes of all of the movies in the first 22 films of that Marvel had. Because it was exactly 30, it was actually 3,000 minutes.
Somebody went and figured that out.
Yeah.
With the credits, with the teasers.
Oh, I don't know. The runtime. Whatever the runtime is, it added up to 3,000. And so they thought it was, and they were like, no, it was just a coincidence. But
interesting.
Anyway, yeah.
Another email from Mike Wills. He says, this is regarding our discussion on private and public calendar appointments. We had a discussion on episode 563 about Are your appointments visible to others, and should they be, and when are they, and are you sharing them? He says, in our environment, for some reason, all the calendar details are public by default. Ouch. Careful what you say. So when the private appointments, then the private appointments make sense. Yes, if you make them private. However, if I'm out for anything, I usually just put out of office on the block and leave it at that. My personal calendar is for my private appointments. So I will often have like a doctor appointment on my personal calendar in Gmail, and I have my calendar app on the phone shows both. It shows my calendar, Donna's calendar, and my work calendar. So I really know if there's any conflict. If somebody says, are you available Tuesday night? Like, oh,
yeah.
Because unless you have a holistic view of all of your schedules, and there's times when you want to have things on your person. I'm certainly not going to be putting my, you know, let's go to dinner with our pastor on my work calendar.
No, but I'm going to tell you, throughout the years, I've struggled trying to work with either getting a Google to Outlook sync. I want everything in one place because just for that reason, if I've got a doctor's appointment during the day,
yes,
I don't want somebody booking an appointment over at work.
Those are the rare exceptions where I'll double book them. So they'll be in my Google calendar because it's that way Donna has visibility.
But I'll tell you what I do.
And then I block it out. Block it out. On my work calendar, I'll just say personal appointment.
Well, here's something else that you can do.
And
I know we're going down the rabbit hole here, but I do have my Outlook calendar on Google as an external calendar. In Outlook, so I can see work and I can overlay my private stuff. If there's stuff during the day, if you switch over to your Google calendar, you copy it, go to your regular calendar, just paste. You'll look like you have two entries, but one of them is for work, and it just don't put anything
in it. That's basically what I do. The doctor always says, your appointment's at 9:10. Well, I have to include travel time because I don't want somebody booking an appointment up until 9 a.m.
Right. You can adjust it, but.
Yeah.
But a quick cut and paste, you have the same time frame is what I was getting at.
Yeah. I usually double book them. I don't even bother with the copy paste because it's just so fast. In exchange, you go drag, personal, done. All right. We have a question of the week from last week. What is something that still blows your mind, even though most people don't find it to be a big deal? Our first entry just moments after I posted this was Jonathan Strickland from the Tech Stuff podcast. Thank you very much. One of our good friends, he was actually on an episode of Technorama at Dragon Con. He was on our panel years and years and years ago. What was that, 2011, 2012, something like that? He says, he's amazed that human beings have set foot on the moon and then returned safely. Some human beings who were meant to go to the moon were in a spacecraft that suffered a massive critical failure and with very little time and resources available. He's talking about Apollo 13, of course.
I was going to say, I've seen this movie.
And resources available both to them and the people on the ground, they were able to work with ground control and get back home safely. These things still fill me with awe. I would agree on that, absolutely. Michael Hickerson responded, he said, he's amazed that there's people that think the Earth is flat. Joan Witt is in awe over the internet, which I think is amazing if you stop and think about it, how any of that stuff works at all. Going from this microphone to your microphone to a listener's ears. That's baffling sometimes.
Yeah, I was going to say was the internet. I didn't see that comment at first because I was going to say, nobody said the internet.
Oh, yeah, they did. My friend Terry Taylor, who's about my age, 1 year older, actually, being on the other side of the planet and talking with friends and family for basically free anytime I want. And I said, oh, yeah. Remember when you had to call grandma a couple towns away and you had to only talk for like 5 minutes so you didn't kill the family phone budget because of long distance charges? It's $3 a minute at this point. It's like, you're in prime rates. Yeah, that was no fun. And he said, and only after 7 p.m. or when Sprint upended the industry at 25 cents per minute. I remember when I was in the service and having to, quote, book time with the international operator, and it costs $7 a minute to call the States. Yikes!
Whoa!
A good friend and co-host on the topic is Trek. .com. Clinton says, being in Boston at 6:30 a.m. and walking into Disneyland before sunsets on the same day. So he's talking about our world of modern travel.
Transporters, they're awesome.
Teresa Vanderwine says, I'm amazed and in awe that the world made it to 2019.
Mm, okay, touche.
If you watch enough sci-fi movies, we didn't.
Yeah,
right. Weber Baker, another longtime listener, says, anything that travels invisibly and comes out elsewhere. At first, I wasn't sure what he was talking about, but he said, you know, like TV, radio, sunshine. So the whole electromagnetic spectrum is actually pretty amazing when you think about it.
I thought he was talking about eating.
Space travel in itself, or space exploration, or the Hubble telescope, or James Webb. A lot of that stuff is amazing. Gary Lindrow says, the amount of information available at our fingertips through the internet / smartphones, it puts the Library of Alexandria to shame. And Clinton gave him a jab. He said, did you just throw shade at an ancient wonder? He says, stay tuned. The Colossus of Rhodes is next to fall to feel my scorn. There are some other great answers in here, including smartphones, of course. Somebody else said the internet. The long distance came up again. Lovely wife and video engineer for this show, my wife Donna, says, online library visits and downloads blow my mind. No more weekly trips resulting in bags of books that could potentially get misplaced or late fees.
Hey, I got a couple of them. I posted the question too. I'll show you. I'll share a couple.
I lost my library card.
Well, my old buddy Nick Bramlett said that there are actually millions of grown people or adults in the U.S. that truly believe the Earth is less than 10,000 years old. Let's see. Jason Jones.
I'm not going to get into that one. I have friends that do that.
Jason Jones, my buddy, he says pocket-sized computers that talk to space. My buddy Edward James Morton, he says GPS. Oh, yep. John Miller Jr. says the people actually that people actually like mayonnaise. I heard Donna that time.
Yeah.
Rob Reel says, no one seems impressed by this micro SD card reader that plugs into my phone and allows me to watch literally dozens and dozens of movies that he has stored on it.
I am amazed and in awe that people listen and watch Technorama.
Yeah. And he's right, though. Look, and think up the physical space that they used to take with Blu-rays or VHS.
Craig,
it's anything.
Insane. And now I remember the 2 gig hard drives that I had in my servers were, you know, full height, 5 1/4 inch. I mean, they were massive, and they shook the enclosures they were in because the head's moving back and forth. You get a 2 gig SD card now, it's not even worth anything. It's like 2 gig. Right. Pff, can't even put a movie on there.
Yeah. And Craig Glassner chimed in, and of course he said, the internet.
That's right. Thank you very much for all of that. That concludes our feedback. So we'll have another question for you next week. Actually, we'll have one at the end of the show, so you can start thinking about it for next week.
Well, my other answer was a toilet. You know, still
indoor plumbing. Amazing.
Yeah.
Hey, right. We went to Israel. They didn't have indoor plumbing in the old days.
What have the Romans ever done for us?
Sorry, line from History of the World Part 2 just came out of my head. Plumbing, get your indoor plumbing. That's pump the right out of your house. Should we do the history thing? Now that we're talking about plumbing and history. On this day in history for July 3rd, 2019. Nothing ever happened on July 3rd, right? It all happened on July 4th. This is the 184th day. Oh my gosh, we're past the halfway mark.
Woo.
Oh, hang on. We're on the downside of 2019.
Yeah. Brace yourself.
There are 181 days remaining. That doesn't add up. Yeah, it does. 365. Never mind. It was on this date in 1608 that Quebec City is founded by Samuel de Champlain. I love a glass of Champlain.
And Pitcairn Island is discovered by midshipman Robert Pitcairn on an expeditionary voyage commanded by Philip Carteret on this date in 1776 or 67.
252 years ago today, Norway's oldest newspaper is still in print. Oh boy. The Adresseavisen is founded. Sorry about that, all my Norway friends. It's founded. Actually, and the first edition is published.
Actually, Adresseavisen reminds me of
the guy who
Mark
invented the web browser stuff.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of when I saw it. Also on this date in 1819, the Bank of Savings in the city of New York, the first savings bank in the United States, opens their doors.
The last pair of great ox is killed on this date in 1844.
Aww.
There's a picture of it on the auk book, but that's spelled A-W-K. The bird was A-U-K.
Yeah, A-W-K.
Do you know what the A-W-K in auk stands for? Hold on. I'm going to pause for a sec.
What?
You know the auk processor program on Unix systems? The yes. A-W-K actually stands for something.
I think I've seen it before. I'm trying to remember. It stands... I don't know. Shoot me.
Aho, Weinberg, and Kernighan. And that's okay, the Kernighan as in Kernighan and Ritchie from the C programming language.
Okay, that was not where I was going with that. Okay.
What were you thinking?
I don't even want to... I don't know. I don't, meanwhile... I thought it was something. I thought it was an acronym for something else. Oh, well.
Maybe your turn.
Yeah. Anyway, it was also on this date in 1852 that Congress established the United States Second Mint in San Francisco.
I think I'm going to put that AWK thing in a Jeopardy question somewhere.
You should.
All right, move your cursor. I can't read. That same date in 1884, the Dow Jones and Company publishes its first stock average. I was looking for what the number was. It was like 21?
2.
0. We had to start somewhere.
Yeah. July 3rd, 1886, Carl Benz officially unveils the Benz Patent Motor Wagon, its first purpose-built automobile.
Wow. Think about this. Automobiles have been around since 1886. Most people think it was after the turn of the century. But that's when the mass production comes along. 133 years ago today, the New York Tribune becomes the first newspaper to use a linotype machine, eliminating typesetting by hand. Oh, my gosh.
And it was also 81 years ago today that the world speed record for steam locomotive is set in England by the Mallard, which reached speeds of 125.88 miles per hour, which was 202.58 kilometers. And Marty and Doc,
when it got up to 88, they were thinking fourth dimensionally. July 3rd, 1962, Jackie Robinson becomes the first African-American to be inducted into the National Baseball Hall of Fame.
And the biggest explosion in the history of rocketry occurs with the Soviet N-1 rocket. Explodes and subsequently destroys its launch pad on this date in 1969.
That's a heck of an explosion if it destroyed the launch pad also. On July 3rd, 1996, the Stone of Scone is returned to Scotland.
They offer those at Starbucks.
Yeah, after their day-old sale.
Day-old scones.
Happy birthday goes out to this date to Danish botanist and physicist Ferdinand Dedrickson, born on this date in 1814.
And Alfred Korbinski, a Polish-American mathematician, linguist, and philosopher, was born on the same date in 1879.
Jesse Douglas, the American mathematician and academic, was born 122 years ago today.
And Edward Brandt Jr., American physicist and mathematician, was born on this same date in 1933.
Also turning 84 years today is American geologist, astronaut, and politician Harrison Schmitt.
And American astronaut Norman E. Thagard was born on this date in 1943.
Thagard? Why does that name sound familiar?
Thagard damn near killed her.
Careful. American singer-songwriter Laura Branigan was born 67. She would have been 67. Wow.
Hmm. And also born on the same date in 1964, American actress, voice actress, comedian, and writer who voices Lisa Simpson in the American animated sitcom, The Simpsons, Yeardley Smith. She does everything.
Listener birthdays include July 4th, Mike McBride. He was born on the 4th of July. July 6th, Peter, 1982, Sweden. I'm not sure what the parentheses mean. Maybe that's when he was born.
Kind of covers everybody.
Where and when he was born. Trampas Whiteman, a.k.a. Dragon Helm, was born on the 8th. We also have two more birthdays on the 8th. Mark Lee, a.k.a. Geek Dad 72, who was born on Stardate 351519.09. I think
good.
Oh, minus 3.5. He had a negative start. I didn't see that at first. Alan Ralph, a.k.a. Mon Templar, longtime listener, was also born on the 8th. If you want to get your name on the birthday calendar, hey, there's a link right there on the bottom of the screen. Or if you can't see the screen because you're listening, it's chuckchat.com/wiki. We'll give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year because we love you and it's your birthday. And if it's not on the calendar, and it's your birthday anyway, happy birthday to you and to all the wonderful people. But you can go over to the chuckchat.com/wiki and get that on there so we give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year. You get included in what is probably my favorite part of the whole show, the history piece.
The only qualification is you got to have a birthday, so you're set.
If you don't have a birthday, contact us. We can help you find one.
Look at your born on day.
Small fee. That's the way it was on this day in history for July 3rd, 2019. All righty. On with the news.
When you do that, I keep seeing a foot come down.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of corpse. We have astronomers. Oh, we need a good one for this. What do we have? We need something that would be like, good unexpected news, everyone. Well, we'll do this.
Good startling news, everyone.
Oh, the way he hangs out of that. News, everyone. Yeah.
Good startling news.
This is from CNET.com. Astronomers keep hearing unexplained, incredibly powerful signals from the far reaches of space. Signals that come through loud and clear for a...
Yeah.
And Men in Black show up just in time.
Dodged a bullet there.
You're never going to hear that the same on TG Geeks again. No. All right. For a thousandth of a second and then mysteriously disappear. Well, you're going to be listening really carefully to hear something for a thousandth of a second. First discovered in 2007, quote, these pulses are known as fast radio bursts, or FRBs, and they remain one of the universe's biggest mysteries. Dozens of enigmatic cosmic signals have been detected, and astronomers have been puzzled over them for the past decade, trying to decode. Wow, decade and decode look a lot alike when your glasses are slightly out of focus. Trying to decode where they came from and what causes them. In a historical first, the international team of researchers have pinpointed the location of a non-repeating fast radio burst, finding its source originates in the outskirts of a galaxy 4 billion light years away. That's pretty far. That's like a third of the way across the universe. The monumental findings published in AAAS Journal Science on Thursday details the discovery and localization of FRB 180924.
In case you need to go look it up.
Or you want to play today's winning lotto numbers. Yeah. It's a powerful one-off fast radio burst that lasted for just a fraction of a second. Speculation about the cause of the bizarre signal takes in everything from explosive neutron stars to alien spacecraft, and while we're still not sure what's causing them, the revelation puts astronomers one step closer to the true nature. Quote, this is a big breakthrough that the field has been waiting for since astronomers discovered FRBs in 2007, said Keith Bannister, lead author on a paper and principal research engineer with Australia's Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organization. I'm sure that spells something. The ACS and IRO. The burst was picked up by the Australian Square Kilometer Array Pathfinder, which consists of 36 radio telescopes working in tandem to scan the sky and listen for radio signals. Situated in the Australian outback, where there's little radio interference. That would be really nice. ASCAP, yeah. Not the record people. This is spelled with a K. ASCAP is...
There's no royalties here.
...able to pick up the faintest whispers from the universe. Yes, they're licensing these FRBs. Every time you play one, we get a dollar.
Yeah, that's right.
The burst traveled from the other side of the universe, smacking into ASCAP's array. And within half a second, the machine stopped the search and downloaded the data from each of the 36 dishes. So they're making progress. We still don't know exactly where they're coming from.
I will say, if you scroll a little bit further down, there's a really cool picture from inside one of these antenna arrays antenna element.
The radio antennas.
And you can see in the distance the rest of the array, but it looks really cool. I'd like to go visit that sometime.
How did they get their cell phone into the array, into the radio dish?
I don't know.
Hmm.
They were trying to call aliens.
By the way, ASCAP stands for Australian Square Kilometer Array Pathfinder.
Okay, cool.
Not the artist, creative, whatever it is for record industry. All right, we have another space news. Your turn.
Space.
Where are we going today?
We're going to Titan to search for life. So NASA, for its next mission in the solar system, plans to fly a drone helicopter to Saturn's largest moon, Titan, in search of the building blocks of life. Although we already have those here, but I guess they want to see if it's there too. The Dragonfly mission, which will launch in 2026, and land in 2034. And I'm sitting here doing the math going, am I going to be around? Yeah, I should be around. You know, to see what they find. we'll send a rotary craft to fly to dozens of locations across the icy moon, which has a substantial atmosphere and is viewed by scientists as an equivalent to a very early Earth. It is the only celestial body. Huh?
It's a lot colder.
Yeah, a little bit colder. It is the only celestial body besides our planet known to have liquid rivers, lakes, and seas on its surface.
Except they're not water.
Yeah, these contain hydrocarbons like methane and ethane, not water. Visiting the mysterious ocean world could revolutionize what we know about life and our universe. This cutting-edge mission would have been unthinkable just a few years ago, but now we're ready for Dragonfly's amazing flight. It said the vehicle will have 8 rotors and fly like a large drone.
Here's your Amazon package.
Yeah.
By 2034, Amazon will probably be delivering to Titan.
Yeah, that would be the package dropping off. during its 2.7-year baseline mission, Dragonfly will explore diverse environments from organic dunes to the floor of an impact crater where liquid water and complex organic materials key to life once existed together for possibly 10,000 years, tens of thousands of years. Excuse me.
Very cool.
I look forward to seeing this. We'll study all kinds of stuff, chemistry and all that good stuff.
Hope I'm still alive when I'm that old. You know, 2034 is only just over 14 years away.
Yeah, we'd be fine. We should be still here.
14 years ain't that long. NASA keeps giving me stuff to look at.
Yeah. We'll report back. We'll report back when it happens.
We're halfway there. Some people make their career out of launching a spacecraft. We make our lifelong career out of podcasting. It's a wonderful thing. All right, here's something that I have mixed emotions about. This is from Teslarati, which apparently is an electric vehicle website. Tesla and other EVs are required to have, quote, traditional engine sound to meet a new EU rule. Electric vehicles such as Tesla are known for being incredibly quiet. Without an internal combustion engine, controlled explosions under the hood. Electric cars are capable of operating in near total silence. This, according to a new EU rule, will be changed soon. The new EU rule coming into force on Monday requires new electric vehicles to be equipped with a pedestrian noisemaker. The new regulations follow concerns that low-emission vehicles, such as the battery electric cars, are simply too quiet for the road, making them a risk for pedestrians, cyclists, and visually impaired individuals, among others. According to the new ruling, a car's acoustic vehicle alert system, or AVAS, must be engaged when reversing or traveling below 12 miles an hour. In its ruling, the EU noted that the vehicles usually back up or travel at low speeds in areas that are near people, such as the city streets or crosswalks, though the new regulation does allow drivers to deactivate their vehicle's pedestrian noisemakers as necessary. By 2021, yeah, because you wouldn't want this thing going honk, honk, honk in the middle of the night in an apartment complex. That would be bad.
Well, do that now. Get car alarms.
Right. That's annoying enough.
Yeah.
So the mixed emotions I have, I think this should extend beyond just electric vehicles because hybrids are quiet too. My car runs in battery mode a lot, like they said, at low speeds in populous places when I'm backing up. I was backing up and one lady didn't even hear me. She almost walked right into me, even though I was already in motion. She wasn't paying attention and went, "Whoa, you almost hit me!" Like you weren't paying attention.
Yeah, well, I saw you coming. Just have it beep like a truck, you know, backs
right.
up.
Right. Well, for backing up, but what about going forwards? I mean, if you're pulling through a parking lot, you know.
Well, at first I was like, are you kidding me? They're going to make cars make sound.
It doesn't have to be a vroom vroom sound. You know, like
Hold on. But at first I was like, what? And then I realized that it's below 12 miles per hour, not
right
above. So when you get going, so that way your highways will be quieter, you know, obviously with more electric cars. But
well, a lot of the highway noise is from the tires. It's road noise. It's not,
well, yeah, I mean, you know,
it's not engine noise.
It's a mix.
Yeah.
That's a mix. I'm but just saying.
At low speeds, right, when you're going through parking lots, you want people to know you're there. Now, it doesn't have to be this violent, crazy noise, because you're not going to have a whole bunch of these going on at the same time. You know, like the emergency broadcast system.
You know, Clinton said just put giant baseball cards on the rims.
Hey, that's not a bad idea. But it could be, yeah, like, you know, that. Something a little more palatable to the ear. Hey, you know,
boom, you know what I boom, want? I boom. Want my car to sound like the Ghostbusters. Ear, ear, you know.
I'm just going to take that one minion who goes, bee-doo, bee-doo, bee-doo.
Yeah.
I think it makes sense.
Ghostbusters again.
It should be electric vehicles. It should be hybrids. Anything that has a quote unquote quiet mode. And like you said, at low speeds, this makes sense. I think it's only a matter of time.
What kind of sounds would you have the car make going forward? I mean,
I would almost make it something like when your door is open, you know, doom, doom, doom. But it's external, so you don't have to be bothered by it in the car. What about, of course, this wouldn't help. If you're talking about hearing impaired people,
mm-hmm.
you'd have to have some sort of flashing light too, but they're already going to be affected by internal combustion engines as well. So,
yeah, well, they've kind of addressed that on some intersections, you know, especially people that are seeing impaired. You know, they can hear the dings in the park in the four-way intersections. Well, that's not everywhere, but I'm just trying to think of what you would apply to a car to make it sound.
Car moving forward. Beware of car.
Warning. Warning, Will Robinson.
Car is 10 feet away from you. Car is on top of you. You have been run over. Would you like to report this? Let's add some artificial intelligence in there at the same time.
My insurance information is.
The police and ambulance are on their way.
And my attorney.
Thank you for riding Johnny Cab. Yeah. Let's take a break. We'll be back with the Hacks and Strange Stories. And I remember when that I really want to dig into. Plus some other cool stuff. So hang on. We'll be right back. Whoops. We already did that one. You know what? Let's not take the break. We're back. I forgot to line up the audio clips.
Okay.
There, we saved you some time. We told you it'd be a long show. I looked down
Donna's
at the
over there going, what is he doing?
Looked down you at know, the soundboard trying. And went, oops. I forgot to line up the clips for this week. And I didn't want to.
Donna's over in the corner going, what is he doing?
And calling an audible on the field. That's what I'm doing. Yeah. All right. Yeah. We had, what was next? The Hacks and Strange Stories?
Yes, the one you wanted to dig into about a moment ago.
Yes, well, before I remember, the remember when was fun too. So let's do the Hacks and Strange Stories. You know what? Why don't you take this one? This feels more like your style. And I just had the last story. So this one's yours.
Sure. So this Philadelphia woman recorded 3 decades of television on 70,000 VHS tapes.
That's a lot of cost.
Let that sink in for a minute. 70,000.
What did a VHS tape used to cost? What, like $3-4 a piece?
It got down to like a few dollars. Yeah.
Okay, say it was $3 a piece. I mean, they got cheaper as they went on. That's $200,000 of VHS tapes in material.
How can you even watch it?
Well, I remember when Star Trek Next Gen was on, Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Mystery Science Theater, I was recording a lot of stuff to VHS and archiving it.
Yeah, but not 70,000. That's like YouTube
pretty
level.
Close. Ask Donna. I was maybe up to 65,000.
Yeah. Anyway, let's get into it. So she mistrusted the media, but recorded it obsessively for 30 years, created a close-knit surrogate family, but led another to become estranged and was a card-carrying communist who bought Apple stock at $7 and made a fortune. How to explain the many contradictions of Marion Stokes, the Philadelphia woman who died in 2012 in a luxury apartment surrounded by 3 decades of taped television and 40,000 books.
Let's get that on YouTube.
Yeah, so an excellent, started uploading. An excellent start is a documentary called Recorder, the Marion Stokes Project. An engrossing look at her unusual life, the African-American woman of humble Philly origins who ended up wealthy, reclusive, and living above the Rittenhouse Square at a Tony address, where she started recording TV around the clock in 1979, which, by the way, VHS tapes were not cheap or plentiful in 1979.
No.
And didn't stop until she died in 2012, according to the 2013 Inquirer store, excuse me.
How many VCRs did she have?
Well, I don't know. That's what I'm curious about. So, she had filled, as we mentioned, 70,000 video cassettes with about 1 million hours of programming.
Okay, let's do some quick math. Let's make it easier for the math. Let's say it's 60,000, and then we'll just adjust at the end. 60,000 hours times 30 years is 20,000 hours a year. Now, if you work a full-time job, you're working about 2,000 hours a year. That would be a 40-hour work week. She had these things running and wasn't even watching them. She had to have had multiples if she had 60, even just 60,000. If she had 20,000 hours a year, that's 400 hours a week.
Yeah.
And that doesn't count weekends. Okay. I'm doing it like math for simplistic purposes. Let's say she took the weekend off.
Right.
400 hours a week. She had to have had multiple units running at the same time.
Well,
that's insane.
Anyway. Yeah, it is insane. So on Friday, June 28th, which just passed at the time of this recording, director Matt Wolff will host a screening of the film at the Lightbox Film Center. In attendance will be some of the friends and family and associates of featured in the documentary, which examines Stokes' life and that converged in her desire to compile an unprecedented and an unmatched stockpile of television content. So you can look down. There's some I actually kind of like the poster for the documentary. It has several television screens with moments in history.
That's kind of what I picture is this lady sitting in front of a wall of TVs and just watching them all with glazed eyes.
Yeah. If you go down a little bit further, there's a picture of a lot of the tapes, all categorized and looks like they're in boxes and everything. So this is pretty amazing. And I would say I want to see this documentary when it's available.
Let's put it on Netflix just to be ironic.
Yeah. You know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of Vivian Mayer. She was a photographer that she was a nanny and stuff like that. And she would take the kids out to different places around in the different cities that she lived. But she had a camera and she would take a lot of photos. I got a book back here. And after she died, somebody had bought a storage building and he realized that it had a bunch of negatives in it. And he started looking at them. They were awesome photography. I mean, awesome photos that she had been taking. And she had thousands and thousands and thousands of them. And he tried to buy as many as he could. And there's a documentary about her as well and how she's kind of a recluse. I think I saw it on Hulu or Netflix or something like that. Vivian Mayer. Very cool.
Cool. All right, let's give a shout out to our wonderful people that showed up on the chat room tonight. See what we can find. Let's see what Facebook does to us tonight.
Scream.
It's I've got Scott Tyler. I've got John Miller Jr., Clinton Alvord, of course, Jason Tucker, Craig Glasner, Mike Wills. We had my scroll doesn't go back far enough, but we had who did we say? Everett and.
Well, here, I'll go back. I got Anthony Beck, my cousin-in-law, and Edward James Morton, an old friend of mine. Let's see. Mike Wills, Tim Elliott, John Miller Jr., and I think Everett Thompson was in there for a little bit. Yeah.
And we do this show we try to do this show every Sunday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern time. So if you can join us on Facebook, if you forget, you can always subscribe to the Technorama podcast page and it'll give you a notification when we go live. So if you happen to be on Facebook, like billions of other people are all the time, you'll get that little thing that says, hey, Chuck and Craig are doing Technorama and you can watch or not. It's up to you. Thank you very much for doing so and joining us as part of the live chat and putting your snippy comments.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's join the history segment. Well, the Remember When segment.
Yeah.
I like this one. I was curiously fascinated by this one. This is an article from Petapixel photography site called How I Shot the Impossible Photo of an Apollo Launch in 1967. They said it couldn't be done. Well, that's, you know, what NASA's...
That's where they start every good story.
Yeah. Especially at NASA. They said that I was wasting my time, that it was impossible to take a time exposure photo of a daytime missile launch in color directly into the Florida sunrise from 10 miles away. That does sound like a heck of a challenge, considering the technology of the time.
And moving in a car in a shot glass.
With your hands off the steering wheel and you're blindfolded. Okay. Right. This is a rather long article, so I'm not going to read the whole thing. I invite you to go to the show notes and check it out. If anybody would know, Arch Smith would. Arch had first conceived the idea of making a time exposure of a daytime missile launch during the Gemini program. He ran the photo department at Martin Marietta's Canaveral Division, and he happened to have an opening for a darkroom technician at the time. I found myself between newspaper jobs. The Gemini rocket used liquid fuel and didn't produce a bright enough exhaust, so Arch photographed the launch of an Atlas Agena rocket that the Gemini crew was going to rendezvous with in orbit. I remember this from all of the documentaries we watched. Did you watch First Man?
No, I have not.
Great story about Neil Armstrong. Go watch it. Movie.
I'll go watch it now.
It would be necessary for Apollo astronauts to rendezvous and dock with the lunar lander when they flew to the moon, so Gemini astronauts were proving that it could be done. Because they had to take the steps in the space program. Can we get a man into space? Can we launch a rocket? Can we join up two vehicles at the same time? You know, all these things that they were aiming for the full moon program had to be tested. The only one they couldn't test was, can we get to the moon and back? I mean, and get off the moon. So, taking a black and white picture of a Saturn V was easy enough. Even Arch thought it might be able to pull that off, despite the fact that Saturn V is also using liquid fuel. Saturn V fuel might not have been as bright as the Atlas fuel, but there was going to be a lot more of it. I only had one tripod, so I did it with the big Crown Graphic press camera sitting on the hood or bonnet, as they call it in England, of my MGA automobile, which Donna just flashed up a picture of the guy's car, an old black and white film. You can see the bonnet in the bottom right corner of this photo. Here's the reenactment of that morning. My cab driver shot this picture of me on February 2019. Wow, so he's got his work cut out for him. Pretty cool stuff. I mean, just imagine, he lists off the challenges.
Well, I can tell you right off the bat, if he's doing a time lapse, back then, it's not like you could just stop the camera and restart it, because what if they go, okay, we got to delay it for 20 minutes.
Well, and from what I saw, it didn't really turn out all that well. They had to color correct it. It had kind of that pinkish tone that looks like an old faded photograph.
A little bit, yeah.
And they enhanced it very nicely.
You know, I'll let you email him and complain.
fraud.
Yeah.
Craig and I, Craig probably more so than me, but we are photography enthusiasts, hobbyists, I can imagine, just into the sun is one thing. Time lapse is another thing. Time lapse.
Yeah.
Because the rocket's way up there and you're 10 miles away.
You'd have to step down the light a lot, especially with the sun right there.
Well, and the clouds are nice and crisp and sharp.
Long exposure.
The tree in the foreground hasn't moved. The sun really hasn't moved, but the rocket takes some time to get up there. So how did he keep the other things from blurring or from getting trails? That's what I don't understand.
I don't know about blur it, but he had to use the filter or step down the light a lot to be able to sit there and let it, you know, run for what, 20, 30 seconds. But time it too.
Yeah.
You know, time it from when it takes off. Cause you don't want to start it and then it takes off 5 seconds later. You want it pretty close to when you start, you start taking the exposure.
And it's not like you can practice this on every other weekend.
I know. Yeah.
Although back in the '60s, they were launching rockets practically every other weekend, But kudos to him. If you want to see a picture of that, obviously we had some on the video, thanks to our wonderful video engineer and wife. My wife, not your wife. if you want to see that, you can go to the show notes, chuckchat.com, look for Technorama episode 568 over at chuckchat.com. There. I got to bring the audio back up on that. Patrons. We have patrons that contribute to the show and get special content. Yes.
Look, I want you to read all the way to that empty block because that empty block's bugging me. We got to fill it.
I thought we had two empty blocks. Did something happen that I didn't know about?
All right. No, there's one. And then we'll start a whole other row. Then we'll have an empty blue row.
Yes. So thank you to our patrons. They are the people that contribute as little as a dollar per show. Not per month. It's per show. And in return, they get their names read off on the show and get special content that we will record right after this, but release it before the other show just to mess with them. So we say, as we were talking about, and they'll have no idea what we're talking about until the regular show comes out. So this includes such wonderful, wonderful people as Kyle Nishioka, Abner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Mike Wills, Megapodtastic, that's Crazy Joe, Night Gig Studios, that's JT Shea, Gary Lindros, John Clifford, Leon, John Noble, that's John Noble.
That's our John Noble.
Chris MC, Alexis Durant, that's AD Dude, Saturday Morning Media, that's Grant Pachoco, Steve Therian, yeah. Jorgis Rowan.
That's Steve Therian. And that's Steve Therian.
That's Jorgis Rowan. John Miller Jr., that's John Miller.
That John Miller Jr.
John Miller's son. Amber yeah. Elstad, Harold McKinstry, Amy Bowen, that's Amelia Bowen, Denise Inglis, Stephen Weshy, Dean Jensen, that's Beaker, Dandy Man Coyer, that's Dandy Man, and Dandy your name Man. Here. Oh, you filled it
Got
in.
The Dandy Man can.
Make the sunrise. I'm putting that on my karaoke list for Dragon Con. All right. Thank you very much, because anyone who's done podcasting know it doesn't come for free. No, they do know it doesn't come for free. I think I said that backwards, something. But there's hosting, there's domain registration, there's software upgrades, there's hardware, there's all kinds of stuff, bandwidth, that you guys really, really help put a dent in offsetting that. So my wife is not on my back this year because the 5 year
Wait, did I say that out loud?
5 year bill is coming due soon. And I'm happy to say that you have really made it possible to carry on the show for another 5 years. And I think this is the first time in the 14 or 15 years that we've been doing this that it's been pretty much self-funded.
Oh, I didn't get that contract renegotiation.
You get promoted to chief executive producer because you're doing most of the stories into the show notes.
There. Okay.
So you get a title, but you know, with all new titles, you don't get a raise.
I get double the raise I want to get paid now.
And we have a heck of a lot of fun at DragonCon, which we will hope to see you there in Atlanta, Georgia over Labor Day weekend. So yes. We have a lot of great people that will be at DragonCon. And we are working on some panels. I can't give you details yet, but we're working on the schedules. Yes.
Trust us.
If you use the app and you look for my name, I am a, what do we call it? The attending professional or something? Yeah, I'm actually on the roster. I'm a guest. I'm an official guest at DragonCon this year.
I thought your title was Weenie. All right.
Well, we can do that. I'll just wear my Chuck Con shirt the whole weekend. I won't that be ripe. Good news, everyone.
And him wearing the same shirt.
Where are we going next? Media Corner? Hey,
yes. Let's do this. Let's kind of skip forward a little bit.
Oh, but we forgot to tell them how to become patrons. Patreon.com/Technorama Podcast.
There you go. Just go sign up.
Skip forward.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so real quick, I just wanted to throw this in there. In the Media Corner, we had I've been watching those little Star Wars animated videos where it's mainly for kids, but what they do is they take the soundtrack from the movies, like the voices and stuff.
And they do anime shorts out of them.
Little anime shorts. I want to see a feature film like this. I think it'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I was watching a number of those. Those are really well done. It feels like you're taking Clone Wars and watching any one of the dozen or so other movies. It was really well done.
Yeah, lots of fun. Go check them out. But this one was about a tribute to the Jedi and the Sith. A lot of fun. I would watch each one. There was one with Han and Chewie, and yeah. I was like, I want to see that. I want to see some more.
I forgot which one I picked. There's one on Boba Fett. Like, yes, there's something that isn't even a movie yet. So it's like, whoa, this is cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very cool.
A lot of fun. So look for that in the media corner. There's a link through there if you haven't already seen it. In the Geek Library, one of my favorite announcements of the past week, the Raspberry Pi 4.
Yes,
I don't have a project for this, but I am really kind of looking for one. Loaded with features. This is more powerful than most computers were just a few years ago.
You might want to ask Donna to leave the room, by the way.
I'm not buying one tonight. They're not available on Amazon yet either. I've been watching. But you can get one, what was it, through Raspberry Pi was it AliExpress? I think I was looking at AliExpress. And they were supposed to be in the same price neighborhood, I thought, about $35, but AliExpress had them for like $52. And I went, no, not yet. So earlier this week, Raspberry Pi introduced a new version of its popular line of single board computer. The Raspberry Pi 4 Model B is the fastest Pi ever, with the company promising desktop performance comparable to entry-level x86 PC systems. It's a 1.5 gigahertz quad-core 64-bit ARM Cortex A72 CPU. I know that's a mouthful, but it's like three times the performance of what you get out of a 3B Plus right now. 1 gig, 2 gig, and 4 gig of LPDDR4 SD RAM. They just love their letters, don't they?
I know,
it's
right?
It's in the same physical size package as the 3B and the 3B Plus that you've probably seen before. Only now we have full throughput gigabit Ethernet, dual band 802.11ac wireless networking, Bluetooth 5.0, two USB 3.0 and two USB 2.0 ports, dual monitor support. At resolutions yes. up to 4K. It's got two. Now, these are the mini HDMIs, not the full HDMI that you had on the older ones. But two 4K out of this little thing. That's got to have some pretty serious heat sink sound is all I can think of. Video Core 6 graphics supporting OpenGL ES3.x, 4KP60 hardware decode, and blah, blah, blah on with the rest of them. Now, even Slashdot says it starts at $35. That must be for the 1 gig version.
Yeah, but there was I was just gonna point out, I'm trying to remember who it was. I was looking in my YouTube stuff. Oh, Gary Explains. If you go to Gary Explains, he has a video breakdown on the different Raspberry Pis. And he was talking about the memory and stuff. The 2 gig one would be great if you're just, especially if you're just doing command line stuff. This thing was more than powerful for that. And he said,
I would think the 1 gig would be fine for just command line stuff. I mean, for most of the stuff that tinkerers do.
Right. But I'm just saying, he was talking about running a desktop with the 4 gig version.
I saw one picture where it had the two 4K monitors up there and this little Pi in the middle of the desk, no case or anything.
You're just sitting there.
It looked kind of funny. The, what was the other one? USB-C power now instead of USB mini. So that's nice. And make sure you get the right AC adapter. Now, there is one available over at raspberrypi.org where you can find that. It is 3 amps now. So I know that the other ones were like 2. Was it? Because if you got an undersized power supply, this actually happened on my 3. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize I was using the wrong USB power supply. And I was getting an under power warning and the thing would just shut down. It goes, look, you're not giving me what I need, so I'm not going to run. So you got to get the right one. I went, oh, well, there's the one that says 2.5. So now they're up to 3. So you got to source these things with a big enough power supply.
Yep. And it does have USB-C for power. And here's another option too for power. I forget. But also he was showing a picture of the desktop where it was starting to complain about the temperature a little bit, and it had like a little thermometer.
Yeah, that's what happened when I was running my 3 without heat sinks, because I don't know where they went, so I had to go order more. But it looks like it's the same physical size, but you're obviously going to need new cases. Again, there was a case on raspberrypi.org, but I'm sure there's going to be a bazillion 3D or a bazillion aftermarket ones. And if you've got a 3D printer, you can always build your own that way if you want.
Yeah. I think the case
looks like everything else in terms of the camera connector, mm-hmm. the display connector, those look like they're all the same. So
it is all compatible. As a matter of fact, nice. he took a module from a previous Raspberry Pi and put it on here. The thing, like you said, is some of the ports are slightly changed because we get USB-C and some other stuff. So the case might not work, but
the case won't work because your display is completely different. However, if you're not using the HDMI, I'm wondering if the other physical dimensions are close enough, because I've got that, Smart Pi Plus enclosure with the,
it fits
the 7-inch display just perfectly. And the 3B Plus fits in the back. I don't think you have to modify it. If it's got the same footprint, I might be able to upgrade the ServiceNow Health Club that I made.
Here we go.
No, I don't need to upgrade it, because the only reason it's got a 3B Plus instead of the 3B is because 3B Plus has 5 gig Ethernet. But that's a story for another time. I don't need the horsepower right now. It'd be nice. But I'll see if I can dream up a new project for next year where I can get my hands on one of these at the expense of work.
You're right.
That's always the plan, right? Make work pay for it.
You can take over the world with an army of Raspberry Pis.
I'm talking to Jason about some projects for work that we can repurpose the old hardware. Maybe we keep the same exhibit. I've got like 40 Amazon Dash buttons that have nothing to do right now.
Send me some. I'll use them.
They're two different varieties. The old and
hopefully
the
they're attached to your account. So every time I order paper towels, they come here, but they bill
no,
you.
No, I'm not ordering products. I'm automating my house. Okay. That takes us to the end of the show. Thank you very much. Look at this. We're going to maybe end up at 101 again. Here's question of the week. If you could install, that's in quotes, one update to your body, what would it be? Oh, only one? Man, I need like 10.
Only one, because they're a little expensive.
You're talking about like fix my sore shoulder kind of thing with a bionic shoulder?
I don't know. Yeah, whatever.
Okay. We'll see what we can come up with for the next week.
And keep it clean.
You had to go there, didn't you? You just steered us down that road.
Yeah, maybe.
All right. That takes us to the end. We appreciate you joining us. Thank you for joining us online, live, or afterwards. If you're watching this on YouTube or wherever you're watching or listening, downloading the podcast, we really, really thank you for it. And thank you again to our Patreon people. If you want more information, go over to the website, chuckchat.com/technorama, or just go to chuckchat.com. There's a big badge that says Technorama. Click that and you'll know where to go. If you're listening at double speed, God bless you. I hope you can understand what we say, because sometimes we talk really, really fast.
Yeah.
Call us on the listener line if you've got any feedback. You want to leave your comments, 707-530-2428. That's 707-530-CHAT. We look forward to hearing from you. Until next time, tell a friend about Technorama, and Craig is going to give you the salutary sign-off that we have been doing forever, and you will see this number everywhere in your lifetime now.
Yes. 101. Be on the lookout.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.